to Redemption, the podcast designed to save the planet. In today's episode, we delve into the world of reuse, an often overlooked but incredibly important aspect of sustainable material management. Reuse sits higher in the waste hierarchy than recycling, yet it's frequently ignored when discussing large-scale solutions to the plastics crisis and overflowing landfills. To explore this topic further, we spoke with inspiring individuals from around the world who are actively promoting reuse in their communities. Our guests today bring diverse perspectives, sharing their unique stories of reuse from different contexts and various parts of the globe. We hear about innovative projects in different economies, each aiming to push us closer to a more equitable and sustainable future. So let's dive right in. I spoke with Dagny Tucker, co-founder of Perpetual, an organization that unites communities, businesses, governments, experts, and citizens to implement reuse solutions. Dagny, it's great to have you back on the podcast. Given your extensive experience in both Europe and the US, we wanted to tap into your insights on the future of reuse and your journey so far. How would you compare the reuse journeys in Europe and the US, particularly regarding policy and the overall environment insofar as it fosters reuse?
Yeah, I have been in this space a little over a decade now and first founded a reusable foodware company in 2014 in New York City. So I think I have the long view. I think Europe has, by and large, a more significant sustainability focus. The awareness maybe is greater, or the value of sustainability maybe is greater by the general population. But I think certainly governments have seen the value. And governments in Europe, by and large, also tend to provide more grants and funding into initiatives that are working in this space. And I think in the early days of this, teeny nonprofits like my own that were fostering the innovation and really trying new things. And I think that European counterparts benefited more from government funding that was available that allowed them perhaps to expand more or do things differently. I think the US is just barely catching up. In fact, Perpetual, I believe, was awarded the first federal grants that were made available to reuse, not reuse specifically, but reuse was allowable within the grants. It wasn't until 2019 that we saw funding that was pushed forward by government in partnership with nonprofits and folks like the Ecology Center and Plastic Solutions Fund to fund something for a municipal system, and that was in Berkeley, California. Then followed by San Francisco, and I think others have followed. But the space remains pretty thin in terms of the types of funding that are available in the US. And I think that that has a lot of impacts, like the type of programs that get out the door. Many of the early programs, most were subscription model programs rather than freely available. And I think that's a consequence of needing to show investment funding that there's a revenue stream that's really viable. And so I think the type of funding that's available, the amount of funding that's available has really impacted this space differently in the US and Europe.
When we spoke on a previous podcast, you mentioned a misconception that Europe is more reuse ready due to greater consumer acceptance. And you just touched on some of the cultural awareness being perhaps more evolved there, whereas American consumer behavior is seen as less supportive of reuse. So how does Perpetual approach the objective to raise consumer awareness or kind of embed the appeal of reuse?
Absolutely. I think that one thing that we do know is that knowing that something is a better environmental choice doesn't always make people choose it. What I believe that we have found is that regardless of the consumer population, the barrier to reuse is less about consumer awareness or buy-in than it is simply the convenience of reuse. And I think that we are deeply embedded in a linear system, and we have thoroughly developed the infrastructure, at least in North America and Europe, to facilitate a linear system. And so the convenience of disposability is just ubiquitous. So I think that what we have seen, and really our premise and why we are doing the work we're doing it, is that reuse is very difficult to grow incrementally. If you only have a certain number of places participating, I think until we can come close at least to replicating the convenience of the linear infrastructure, that it really doesn't matter how well educated consumers are. What matters is, can they see a system that works for them? And is it easy to use? Is it convenient to use? Is it price comparable to use? I would just say, honestly, we are designing for behavior, not for behavior change. I think the premise that we're going to educate everyone to do the right thing because it's better, it's aspirational, but I don't know how realistic it is, rather than presenting a scenario that's as easy and akin to what they are already doing. And then it's much easier to choose the reuse option.
Can we tame the beast in the US, given that the expectation in the United States is this sort of convenient lifestyle? The whole notion of disrupting that is to some a threat, whereas in other places, it hasn't really taken hold, even though it's encroaching.
Yeah, it absolutely is a beast. And in the design world, we'd call it a wicked problem because it is complex. It involves a lot of stakeholders. As we address many planetary crises, we can look at the plastics treaty that's being negotiated in the UN right now. There's indicators that there is a level of seriousness around this to the extent that actually turns into sort of regulatory demands or policy in the US. I'm not sure, but I think to the degree that we can begin to see initiatives on broader scales with more stakeholders playing to develop examples and demonstrative scenarios in which reuse is totally viable. We lived with reusable glass bottles with Coca-Cola in the past, in the US and everywhere else in the world. In some markets, it still represents up to 40% of some of the largest beverage producers in the world of how they're doing things. So I think we'll need to think sectorally. I think we'll need to think about what products are most viable to transition to reuse. We do see increasing EPR, and EPR has a role that it can potentially really play in encouraging reuse above recycling. I think we are still in an excellent position to address sort of short supply chain products. This is why Perpetual has started with foodware. All of our systems are designed to expand into other sectors like FMCG, things sold at grocery stores, etc., as we begin to see more packaging formats with options there too. So, you know, it's a big beast, but we have to just look at it where the greatest opportunities for success match with impact opportunities and start chipping away. Really, in my mind, reuse should be seen as a public good. It provides a lot of co-benefits in addition to the diversion of the waste and the pollution, the potential health impacts we're all experiencing because of this, providing better, cleaner jobs. In some cases, you can really integrate the informal sector in general. These are upwardly mobile jobs. They bring people into the sustainability fold. So the number of co-benefits could go on.
I love that you call it a public good. It makes me think of the role of cities and city government, which is to provide public services. And for years, that public service has been waste collection, a recycling collection, and now increasingly food scrap collection. And you and Perpetual as a whole have made a very incisive and decisive stake on cities being the vanguard in terms of driving reuse systems and activations. So talk to our listeners about where you see cities acting.
City scale is the scale we believe can bring reuse really into the fold of the mainstream, because it becomes ubiquitous, it becomes accessible, you see it everywhere, the social proofing is very good, you create that similar effect to the linear where you provide enough infrastructure for it to be easy. So I think cities should really be using every tool in their arsenal, essentially. If it is a city that has political will to put policy in place, obviously policy is a huge driver. And we perceive a pushback from business around policy. I think that there is also maybe a secret sigh of relief that comes because there's a certain leveling of the playing field. And I think this is one of the big reasons we haven't seen massive moves by any particular company. Everybody has played, all the big multinationals are doing something with reuse, but really nobody's going to take the risk of taking on that additional cost if they don't know they have to. It's just not competitive. So I think policy, and I think within the policy fold, there's everything from planning something to creating fees. The ordinance in Berkeley actually went through as an ordinance, as a fee that the businesses collected to be used to support a transition to reuse. It wasn't originally written that way, but I think they have adjusted that. And that is because it didn't require a vote. So it was the way to move something forward. And I just want to give a lot of empathy to cities, to be honest, because I think that city government has been really interested in reuse. And I've seen it across the country, unexpected places, the obvious places, but there's really a lack of technical expertise. They don't know where to begin. I think cities are also complicated because reuse touches so many city offices, right? Does it fall in the Office of Sustainability? Does it fall under Public Utilities? Does it fall under Waste Management? And so I think that cities are really wrestling where reuse would even live because it's not one size fit all. And of course, Europe isn't either. It has a million different languages and cultures and peoples, but it does have a unifying body of the EU that is pretty strong in terms of legislation and policy. So I think we have to just really learn to be nimble in the US and creative with working within the constraints of each different city setup and capacity.
You talked a little bit about the Global Plastics Treaty. What do you see as the future of reuse systems globally?
I hope that regardless of where the treaty lands, it will still at least provide something of a bolster to reuse globally. In terms of what's happening regionally and how we learn from each other, one of the challenges with the plastics treaty can be, for instance, sachet culture that has developed in much of the global south, driven by a number of things, but often a lower price per unit, although that is a tax on the end user, convenience, and also a culture of these very small shops that exist, often informal shops at somebody's house or garage, and limited amount of space where a huge portion of the population shop. So in that part of the world, sachets are one of our biggest problems, but not necessarily in another part. So I think regionally, it's going to be really critical to understand what is the right product segment or category to go after first. Regardless of those shifts, we can understand and share pretty broadly how to do the evaluation of how we can get there, how we can understand what products need to go first. I think we are at a bit of a rock and a hard space where there's a lot of work to demonstrate these systems at scale. And I do think that the combination of having projects that can give confidence to policymakers to move forward with policy is really critical. Foundationally, we're going to have to solve the price parity issue. There's going to really need to be mechanisms. And I know we talked about EPR, but whether something comes through the plastics treaty or we see movement like PPWR, but I think we are going to have to wrestle the beast that is business first and just keep our eyes wide open on that piece of the puzzle. And there's been a tremendous amount of work in the NGO world, Ellen MacArthur Foundation, World Economic Forum, many, many others, yourselves, to develop resources for people to start understanding how to think about reuse. And I think we're going to have to just get further and further along. It's a real systems thinking problem. So at the risk of repeating myself, reuse is very complex, but it is not rocket science. So I think we can provide the tools for people to begin to understand how they can implement reuse in their communities, geographies, countries.
Shifting our focus from the US and Europe to Southeast Asia, I spoke with Marianne Ledesma, Passionate environmental advocate and prominent figure in Greenpeace Philippines, Marian has been at the forefront of campaigns promoting sustainability in the Philippines. Her work focuses on advocating for policy change and implementing practical reuse and refill systems to address the country's challenges around waste. Marian, our previous guest mentioned the issue of sachets in the waste stream. Could you please begin by setting the stage for our listeners and shedding some more light on that issue?
Yeah, the Philippines is what many call a sachet economy. It's essentially quite dependent on these single-use plastic packagings. And I know not many in Europe or North America know about sachets because it isn't so commonly used there. But here in Southeast Asia, sachets are multi-layer plastic packaging that are single-use or disposable. And they are utilized for a number of goods, but most often for fast-moving consumer goods. So you have your snacks, your condiments, also different toiletries or like household care items, like dishwashing or different cleaning materials for your homes. And in the Philippines, it's estimated that around 164 million sachets are utilized on a daily basis. And that can amount to billions and billions just in a week. So that number is just for sachets alone. And sachets make up around 52% of our residual plastic waste stream. It does contribute a lot to the plastic waste in the country. And this is why Greenpeace and so many other organizations are campaigning to phase this out and shift to reuse.
And how would you say reuse is perceived in the Philippines?
The Philippines is pretty familiar with the idea or the concept of reuse. Reusing materials, equipment, different kinds of packaging is sort of something that is ingrained because it was being done in our past practices. But when it comes to reuse as a system, sometimes they don't quite realize that some of the business processes being done are actually reuse systems or reuse models. Like one of those is using sodas and beer that come in glass bottles. These materials are reusable by design and they get refilled in the companies and utilize a deposit return system. So people are quite surprised when you say, well, an example of a reuse system is what we've been doing for decades. So sometimes it's a revelation for them to know that we've been doing all of these sustainable practices for quite a long time. But at the same time, there's also these apprehensions around reuse. For one, some people worry about the affordability factor of things. Their only understanding of some reuse models has been to see them in zero waste stores at malls, and it doesn't necessarily cater to low income groups, for example. So they worry about that price point. Some of them are concerned about accessibility, having to go all the way to certain areas just to get your reusable packaging or refill system. And then the third thing is really all about thinking about the convenience factor. So many people, not just in the Philippines, are so used to convenience system of purchasing and disposable packaging, not having to think about ensuring that these go back to the companies for reuse or refilling, for example. That's really one area that the work around reuse and refill systems needs to address. But at the same time, despite all of these uncertainties, Filipinos have been open to supporting reuse and refill systems, and we've seen quite a lot of positive feedback from people when we talk about solutions. They're excited about learning more about it and also seeing other solutions playing out in other Asian countries. When they see it or can relate to it, they really feel that all of the alternatives to plastics are possible and something that they're looking forward to. I believe that Greenpeace ran this survey in collaboration with our global team. They ran a survey in 19 countries, and the Philippines and Indonesia were one of the countries that had the highest rates for support to shift businesses and the government to try to find shifts to reuse and refill solutions. So that was very good news for our team to see such great feedback and response to reuse.
That's so great to hear. You've been closely involved in a very unique project, Kuhasa Tinggi, which focuses on reuse and refill at small community stores. Could you tell us more about the conception of this initiative?
Back in 2020, we really started conceptualizing this idea to find alternative to sachets and try to prove that it is viable and doable for big companies to implement and also to scale within the country. So Greenpeace collaborated with Quezon City, San Juan City, and an incubation hub that now turned into MSME that works on refill. That's Ripple X. And this collaboration resulted in the creation of a refilling system that would install dispensers in small community stores that we call sari-sari stores here in the Philippines. So these sundry shops or small retailers that are in communities, they normally sell items in sachets or in other kinds of plastic packaging. And we wanted to bring community sort of an affordable, accessible, and a simple alternative to these sachets. Because we've heard people want to reduce their plastic waste. They also want to look at solutions, but they haven't really found one that fits their budget or is right there in their community or is simple or convenient in a way that the current system with sachets are. So what we've seen with this project is that we really had to work on something that was equal to or cheaper than products that are in sachets. We also wanted the model or the system to be as simple as possible. Had to be accessible in the sense that the options were there in the communities themselves. Like people that wanted to buy any kind of consumer good would be able to find it in the corner store or in the sari-sari stores. So that's why we came up with Buhas sa Tingin. And what we've seen with the project is that the simple effort of installing refilling dispensers and ensuring that there's a delivery system for these to get to the stores and to ensure that these containers get refilled, it has produced multiple environmental and socioeconomic benefits. For one, it reduces the amount of sachets that are being bought or consumed in communities. So in 8 weeks, we were able to avoid 56,000 sachets based on a 30 milliliter size. And we also found that consumers were able to save while at the same time, the stores were able to get a higher profit. This is in comparison to buying and selling sachets, respectively. And the last thing that we were happy to note was that there were also some behavior changes, not in all of the stores, but we did see some stores stop selling dishwashing liquid in sachets. This was because they saw that people were pretty content already with what was being delivered in a refill format. They found it cheaper, so they were opting for this. And at the same time, we also saw some consumers that really take to this bring your own container model. It was sort of a shift back to this practice. And yearly, what started with 40 stores in San Juan and Quezon City now has led to around 1,200 stores in four cities, because these two cities that we work with, as well as two other cities, provided funds and set up a program with Ripple X to install dispensers in different community stores. So it's been positive, and Greenpeace is very happy that this one initiative showed the viability of these systems and also the possibility of integrating environmental and livelihood programs together at a city level can work to reach different communities and provide alternatives.
Wow, that's really incredible. This project clearly requires a strong commitment and collaborative effort from various stakeholders. What approach do you take when speaking to each of them, and especially to the small retailers interested in participating? And how do you get them on board?
When we started this project, first orient all of the stores that wanted to participate, give them a background on why we're doing this, why it's so important, just so they also understand that the purpose behind this isn't just an exercise in trying to find new models for business, but it's also one trying to find a sustainable solution to reduce our plastic production and consumption. So we had an orientation on the plastic pollution crisis, gave them also the benefits that have been found all over the world when it comes to engaging in reuse and refill systems, such as reducing the amount of materials that you would use, also having better impacts in terms of reducing carbon emissions. We also wanted to show that what they're doing at a local level does have impacts or implications up and down the line of the plastic life cycle. that what they're doing can contribute to reducing plastic production that has a lot of negative impacts. There are positive benefits for supporting reuse and refill in the sense that they'll be able to reduce the costs for waste management if they can reduce the overall amount of plastic waste that's being generated in a city. That's pretty important when you're talking to municipal leaders or communities, other than how they're contributing to the solutions to environmental problems. They also want to know the practical benefits of it. So you're talking about trying to see that, okay, it's cheaper or as cheap as products in sachets. A lot of people don't know a lot of these impacts or implications of utilizing plastic. So that has been an eye-opener for them, especially in terms of chemicals and microplastics, for example, the health implications of it, and also the impacts to communities. They do appreciate knowing more about this issue other than just seeing it as a plastic waste issue. And they're quite interested with being part of the solution. The same for the cities that are participating in this. I think it's also important that when you're talking to the communities and businesses, you do have that link that I mentioned earlier about carbon emissions, because if they are doing reporting on climate action, for example, the work that you do for reuse and refill does have links on how you can reduce your carbon footprint, whether that's as a business or as a city or a government doing it.
With all this incredible work underway, how do you see the future of such initiatives playing out? And how do you see them contributing to the country's broader goals? Or taking it a step further, how do you see them playing out on a global scale?
Yeah, that could be my favorite question. I really like when people ask about the possibilities around reuse and refill for the country, and there's a lot of hope there. There's definitely more and more solutions that are popping up or being led by communities. More cities are getting involved in implementing these reuse and refill models in their communities. And there's also more and more support at a national and global level to look at alternative distribution systems. So my vision for the Philippines is really a country where there are reuse and refill systems that are available for all kinds of socioeconomic sectors and classes. And we also want them to be available wherever you go. As Greenpeace Philippines, we are in trying to engage the government into improving our current Extended Producers Responsibility Act to have targets for reduction, reuse, and refill. So globally and here in the country, Greenpeace is calling for establishing these targets, whether that's in the Global Plastics Treaty or in our local and national laws or policies. We'd really like to see governments have a mandate for companies to reduce their plastic production and usage by setting up these targets and at the same time having a system or a target for reuse and refill so that these companies are obligated to shift. And currently, our EPR law here in the country only has a waste recovery target. So there's no incentive or motivation for companies to really invest in reuse and refill. At the same time, it's important that there's a just transition when we're shifting to these systems and that there's support for micro or small enterprises, MSMEs, basically, that want to shift but don't necessarily have the resources or the technical know-how to try to implement these. I think that's the one positive, really, when you look at Asia and the Global South in general, is that there are still some practices and routes that are existing or just need to be modernized in a way to get them to really help us with the shift away from plastics. And that's what's so promising about Asia as a region, is that there are some existing practices of reuse and refill already in place. We just need to sort of improve it and help them scale in a way. So fingers crossed for that to happen.
Thank you for joining us on this fascinating exploration of reuse stories. Together, we're uncovering how individuals and communities across the globe are developing and adapting innovative reuse strategies tailored to local needs. These stories highlight the crucial role reuse plays in tackling plastic pollution globally. From our discussion, it's clear that reuse is more than just a method to reduce waste. It's a powerful catalyst for cultural change towards more sustainable living. Whether it's through citywide initiative or grassroots community projects, the momentum behind the reuse movement is growing, proving that change is achievable when we rethink how we use and manage materials. We hope this episode has inspired you to think about how reuse can be a part of your life and community. At ReLoop, we proudly support the reuse revolution, and we're thrilled to be releasing this episode so close to the International Coastal Cleanup Day and during our second reuse tour. On this tour between September 13th and 18th, I, along with key city leaders from six major cities in the U.S., will be traveling to Denmark and Germany, exploring innovative ways to implement reuse in cities, and learning from some of the leading experts in the field of reuse to create long-lasting benefits for communities, businesses, and municipalities. As our guests today have mentioned, cities are truly at the forefront of this revolution and must lead the charge in addressing the climate crisis. We look forward to sharing more inspiring reuse stories from around the world soon. In the meantime, don't forget to visit our website for more resources and subscribe to our newsletter for the latest updates. You can also leave a review on Redemption wherever you listen to your podcasts. And remember, working together from a common ground of knowledge, we can move effective initiatives forward.